White Christians have set the tone for this country dating back to its founding, but that's changing, and changing in some profound ways. For one thing, white Christians no longer comprise a majority of the nation as they did as recently as 2008, when Barack Obama won the presidency for the first time. Our guest today says this is key to understanding the politics of 2016 and the rise of Donald Trump, and ironically, the decline of white Christian America ultimately could wind up revitalizing American politics. Our guest today is Robert Jones. He's the author of The End of White Christian America. He's also the founding CEO of the Public Religion Research Institute. Robert, nice to have you. Good morning.
Oh, thanks for having me.
That's a pretty bold title, The End of White Christian America. Give us the quick version. How do you defend that title?
Yeah, well, it's a provocative title, but it's at the end of the day a data-driven book based on facts and changing statistics in the country. What I mean by white Christian America, though, it's important that I am really using this term white Christian America as a metaphor for the kind of total cultural and political edifice that was really built primarily by white Protestant Christians that really did set the tone for our national conversations and shape American ideals for most of our history. And it's the centrality of that kind of cultural edifice and cultural institutional structures that are really passing from the scene in terms of their central power. So that's what I mean by the end of this era of white Christian America.
You know, I always thought that evangelicals were soaring in numbers. Is that the case? And how do they figure into this?
Yeah, well, you know, inside this world, there are really two groups of white Protestants. One are white evangelical Protestants, as you've mentioned, who are the more conservative end of the spectrum and are more numerous in the South and in the Midwest. And then there is essentially the more Northeastern sort of cousins to that group and upper Midwest that are the white mainline Protestants. So these are Episcopalians and the United Church of Christ and the Presbyterian Church USA are in that mainline world. And, you know, what the conventional wisdom has been that the decline has been confined to the more liberal end.
Correct.
The more
that's what I thought.
End.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But what has become clear really only over the last decade is that what we're now seeing is two waves of decline. One that was led in the 1970s and the 80s by the mainline Protestant group. But in the last decade, we've actually seen this second wave of decline among white evangelical Protestants, where, again, they've gone from being 21% of the population back in 2008 to 17% today. So
that's
pretty precipitous drop. Even if you look inside a group like the Southern Baptist Convention, the largest evangelical denomination, they've now posted 9 straight years of losses in terms of their growth rate.
You know, still, it seems to me that white Christian America is going to remain a significant force for some time. Yet you begin this book with an obituary for white Christian America. Why did you go that way?
Yeah, so I begin the book with an obituary, as you say, and I end the book with a eulogy on the other end of it. But I was trying to find a way to tell this story, and what's clear to me is that one of the I think more interesting things I found in some of the historical research I was doing is that a historian kind of put the power of white Christian America fairly colloquially, and he said this: look, if in the middle of the 20th century, say in the 1950s, if you were in charge of something big and important in the country, like anything from government to commerce to a social institution, chances are you were white and Protestant. And that's the kind of power that this group had in the 1950s and in the middle of the 20th century. And it's just really clear today that having that kind of ubiquitous power is something that while, you know, white Christians are still numerous, they still make up 45% of the country today. And still those institutions have some power, but they no longer really dominate the American scene the way they did 50 years ago.
Is the pace of decline increasing?
You know, it is. We really see from the seeds of this in the 1990s, and it has kind of, you know, been on the slow uptick. And then the last decade, we do see this accelerating trend. And it's due to a couple of things. It's due to, externally, it's due to lower birth rates among whites, so some kind of basic demographics, combined with immigration patterns, particularly higher numbers of Latino immigrants over the past 30, 40 years. But internally, there is this other dynamic, and this is the one that I think has been largely missed, that works kind of in concert with these external dynamics, that beginning in the 1990s, we saw this acceleration in the number of Americans who claimed no religious affiliation whatsoever. So in the 1990s, this was always in single digits. That number today is 23%. So we have nearly a quarter of Americans wow. today who say they claim no religious affiliation. And this has been predominantly fueled by younger people. So among younger people, it's more than a third today who say they have no religious affiliation. So it's this kind of internal exodus by, you know, white younger Christians combined with the demographic changes in the country that have really accelerated this trend over the last, you know, 10 years. And you know, again, if you use this Barack Obama as a marker, his first candidacy in 2008, as recently as 2008, the country was 54% white and Christian, and today that number is 45%. So about a percentage point a year over the last 8 years.
And the demographic trends would suggest that this bubble of unaffiliated Americans is only going to increase if that trend continues.
Yeah, this is a question I get a lot, you know, because I think there's a kernel of truth to saying that, you know, people in their 20s, generally speaking, are less likely to go to church. They're working multiple jobs. They're moving around a lot. They're single. They don't have kids. And with marriage rates getting pushed out, this is even more true today. But, you know, that argument goes when they get into their 30s and they get married and they're looking to kind of settle down, they will find a church and they will come back. There's certainly some truth to that. But here's the difference is that even if we look at the baby boomers, the previous generation that was nearly as large as the millennial generation, and we look at them in their 20s, they were nowhere nearly as unaffiliated as the millennial generation is today. So even if some proportion of that millennial generation comes back, they will still be the most religiously unaffiliated generation that we have on record.
Wow. Wow. Well, we've talked about the trends here. We haven't talked about why this is happening, Robert. What's behind it? What's going on?
Yeah. Well, I've mentioned the external factors. I mean, there's clearly some demographics at play, you know, here that we've been hearing a lot about from the Census Bureau. But one of the things I think the book does is it helps us understand the cultural piece of this, because if you only sort of know the data we get from the Census Bureau, which, by the way, is prohibited by law from asking about religion. So that's why we don't get religion data from the Census Bureau. But we, you know, they would say, well, by 2042, whites will be no longer a majority just in terms of race in the country. And so that's not that far away. But it's when you sort of use this other lens of religion that the kind of real cultural shift snaps into focus. And we realize that we've already crossed this incredible boundary of kind of, you know, if you think about the U.S. as this kind of WASPy, the kind of, you know, the conventional wisdom is a white Anglo-Saxon Protestant cultural kind of center to the country, and that's really no longer the case. That's quite extraordinary that we've happened. And, you know, so externally it's these forces of immigration and birth rates. Internally, it's the leaving churches. The question why there is really interesting. You know, we get a whole range of answers when we ask kind of why. The two things that stand out are that we hear consistently from younger people, whether we're talking to them in focus groups or whether we're talking to them on representative national surveys, is that they came of age in the 1980s and 90s when the Christian right was really coming onto the scene in full force. And part of what has formed their experience of religion and public life is a very kind of partisan form of religion, and they've reacted against that. And so it's both kind of partisanship, kind of the church being wrapped too much up into partisan politics. And then the other piece of it is that about a third of them, and this is true of millennials who were raised religious and then left by their 20s, right? So early in their adult life have left organized religion. When we ask them how important because the other thing we kept hearing was that negative teachings about gay and lesbian people was a big factor. And when we asked about that, about a third of those who were raised religious and have now left actually named that as an important reason for them leaving. And just to, you know, kind of help that, so help you understand the context there. Today, nearly 8 in 10 millennials, so those under the age of 35, support same-sex marriage. Mm. And that's a very different stance, particularly than right. many conservative white churches have taken. And so there's this great cultural disconnect on that issue.
Robert Jones is my guest. He's the author of The End of White Christian America. He's joining us this morning from the studios of NPR in Washington. I'm wondering for our listeners, what do you think the impact of the decline of white Christian America is on this country? How is it affecting the church you attend? 816-235-2888 is our phone number here. Again, 816-235-2888, or you can tweet us at KCUR up to date. You know, Robert, has the country even begun to come to grips with what this very significant shift is going to wind up meaning down the road?
Yeah, you know, I don't think so. I mean, I think that this election, you know, we were wrestling with it a little bit in 2012, but I think this election is the one where it's really coming to the fore. I've often thought of this of, you know, as the similar dynamic that that I think couples get into sometimes, where they have this like knockdown drag out argument over who left the towel on the floor, right, in the bathroom. And it's only sort of later that you realize that the argument was about something much, much deeper in the relationship. And I think that part of our politics is having this kind of experience. And one of the things that actually led me to write the book is that as I looked at arguments, you know, around things that are they're very much contentious issues, abortion, same-sex marriage, immigration. I mean, these are things that people honestly disagree about. Mm-hmm. But it always seemed to me that the rhetoric, the visceral nature of the rhetoric, far outstripped the actual disagreements about those issues. And I think that part of what's fueling that extra level of energy is that part of this is about this big cultural shift and the move, and really the loss of power, the loss of centrality of white Christians in American society today.
And Robert, you know, the demise of white Christian America has set the stage for Donald Trump's surprising popularity among some white voters. What's the connection there? What do you see going on?
Well, you know, it's an unlikely one, I have to say. I mean, going into the election, I mean, I, like most, you know, people who are following kind of voting patterns and stuff, you know, would have far predicted that any number of candidates, whether it was Ted Cruz or Mike Huckabee or Rick Santorum, would have outperformed Trump among white evangelical voters.
Absolutely.
Particularly in the South. But, you know, when we got to Super Tuesday, Trump pretty handily swept the entire South, you know, across the board. And, you know, that became, I think in many ways, and still is, like, what is going on? How is it that, you know, a guy who's been married three times, who owns casinos, who mm-hmm. curses from the platform, who says he's never asked for forgiveness, which is kind of a key tenet of, like, evangelical theology, how is it that that guy has made this appeal? And, you know, thinking a lot about this, I mean, I think that one of the things that happened here is we had a little clue to this way back at the beginning of the election cycle when Donald Trump spoke at an evangelical college in Iowa back in January. He made this very explicit appeal. He didn't try to make the case that he was one of them, but he did say, look, when I am president, I am going to restore power to the Christian churches. And then he added this very interesting comment. We're not going to have to say happy holidays anymore. We're going to be saying Merry Christmas again in this country. Hmm. And that little signal, I think, was, you know, this explicit claim, I'm going to restore power to the Christian churches, is a realization that many of his audience was feeling this loss and grieving this loss of place, really, in the center of American society, and saying he was going to restore that. And then this, you know, kind of doubling down on it and saying what that Merry Christmas thing signals is that, you know, these groups were going to be able to really assume a kind of centrality of Christianity mm-hmm. in the culture and not have to sort of make place for pluralism or be sensitive about Jewish Americans or others who weren't celebrating Christmas, but were going to kind of reclaim the place of Christianity in American culture. And I think it's that appeal, really, that his slogan, you know, make America great again, it's that last word again that I think was doing most of the work here. And what I have argued in some pieces that I wrote, according to an op-ed in the New York Times a few weeks ago, was that Trump has essentially converted self-described values voters, which is the way that they talked about themselves and they were largely understood, into what I've been calling nostalgia voters, voters who are driven less by sort of his character and thinking he's one of them, and more by a belief that he is going to be able to restore this cultural world that they feel has slipped
the
away.
The way it used to be. Yeah. Let's go to some phone calls here. 816-235-2888. What do you think the impact of the decline of white Christian America is and what it's been on this country? 816-235-2888. Jim from Lee's Summit. Jim, you're on the show this morning with Robert Jones. Good morning.
I just found this really interesting. I'm a retired Southern Baptist pastor. And anyway, have a, you know, what he said about gays and lesbians, I think it's true. You know, I think it really affects younger people. Mm-hmm. I've seen that with my own children and grandchildren. But I would, I had noticed that Southern Baptist attendance had gone down, although there's some huge, you know, churches like out here in Lee Summit where I live, you know, there's, I drove by a church the other day. It was just, you know, I couldn't believe how big it was. But anyway,
But you think the influence is waning, Jim, if I'm hearing you right.
Yeah. I mean, what he said about the number of, the nuns, you know, I have one of my sons that I can't believe it. He grew up, you know, in the churches I pastored and he told me a year or so ago, he said, I don't believe any of that stuff.
Well, Jim, I appreciate that. Maybe for an opposite view, let's go to Richard from Olathe. Richard, you're on the show. Good morning.
Good morning. I enjoy your program.
Appreciate it. Go ahead.
Yes. I just told your greeter, the lady I spoke to earlier, about my comment about your show. I belong to a particular church denomination that is somewhat the opposite of what we're talking about today. It's largely all a white denominated group. There are a lot of people, there are a lot of converts, a lot of young families with children, and a lot of young families with expecting children. And we just seem to be growing extensively, even among the other churches of our similar denomination.
What is the denomination, Richard?
We're Eastern Orthodox.
Okay.
So we're right now the particular church that I belong to is Orthodox Church of America, but the other churches that I'm aware of is the Greek Orthodox Church, the Serbian Orthodox Church, the Ethiopian Orthodox Church,
right,
and Antiochian, and then the other members of monasteries and et cetera, that's grown up in the past few years. And
let me see, Richard, if our guest knows anything about the rise of these Orthodox churches. Robert?
Yeah, no, it's really interesting. I mean, the Orthodox churches in America, as he's correctly saying, are a kind of conglomeration of, you know, Russian, Greek, typically kind of Eastern European churches. And just for your listeners, I mean, their history is from a rift with the Roman Catholic Church, you know, that's now like 1,000 years old. So it's a long kind of divide. But in the American scene, still fairly small group. But you know, I think we don't have enough data because they are small enough, I think, at the national level to know, like, specifically whether they're kind of sharing the decline. But one interesting thing to note is that, you know, these churches historically were really seen outside of the Protestant world. Like, so they were sort of not really seen to be part of this kind of, you know, dominant culture that I've been calling white Christian America. In fact, many of them may not have even been seen as white, even though they are today, historically. So they've had their own kind of trajectory in the American religious landscape that's a little bit separate from this kind of dominant Protestant model. They've always seen themselves as kind of a minority Christian, you know, presence in the American landscape, unlike say the Baptists from the first caller that we had, that especially in the South, have always seen them part of the dominant you know, cultural presence in the country.
That's the voice of Robert Jones. He's the author of a new book, The End of White Christian America. Our phone number, 816-235-2888. Robert, you'll get a kick out of this. Joe emailed us, best news ever. This country and the world will be much better off when people stop clinging to a bunch of Bronze Age fairy tales fabricated to control the lives of illiterate goat herders. Religious faith is the worst possible basis for making rational choices in the 21st century. So I'm wondering, how will the decline of the white Christian voter pool wind up affecting the November election this year? What do you see?
Yeah. Well, what we see is that in the voter population, a very similar decline. If we look at this over time, and in fact, 2024 will be the first election where we have a voter pool that is a minority white Christian voter pool. And the reason for the delay, really, that we see in the voting population is because, despite the fact that we see these disparities, or this shift already happening in the general population, white Americans still, and white Christians in particular, still vote at higher rates than non-white Christians do in the country. And so their presence is still felt in an outsized way at the ballot box. And now, having said that, I argued in the book, and I think we may have a test case on our hands here. I argued in the book that Mitt Romney's campaign was the last one where what I called a white Christian strategy would work. That is, piling up supermajorities of white Christians to offset the growing numbers of other groups in the country. But I think the way that the Trump campaign is really shaping up, rather than following the Republican National Committee's recommendations about reaching out to non-Christians, to African-Americans, to Latinos, Trump really does seem to be doubling down on this appeal to white Christians in the country. So we may have a real test about whether there's enough of those votes out there to really pull off a national win in 2016.
Let's go back to some calls here and go to Paul from Mission, Kansas, on that side of the state line. Paul, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I work for a large nonprofit that does poverty relief work around the world. Most of our programs are religiously based. I'm not a goat herder, but I do make rational decisions based on my faith.
Good for you, Paul.
Thank you. So one of the things that we've seen demographically, obviously, is the growth in the Latino segment, but specifically Latino evangelicals. And I'm wondering if there's any data in terms of how they break politically. Obviously, socially more conservative, but then you have a candidate who is pretty opposed to a lot of things that would be close to them otherwise. So
yeah.
Do we have trends on that and their voting patterns?
Yeah, thank you, Paul.
Really interesting question. So Latino Protestants are still only 3 or 4% of the country in total. So they're a tough group to really get. You can't, for example, in your typical national poll get
too small
a statistically
sample.
Significant
yeah.
Right. Yeah, group here. So we don't know a lot is the real answer about. They do tend to be what we do know is that Latino Protestants tend to be much more conservative than Latino Catholics do. And so part of the conversion, many of them were previously Catholic, or at least two generations back, their family was Catholic. And that conversion to being Protestant typically comes with a more conservative theological outlook that looks a lot more evangelical, charismatic, or Pentecostal in its expression. And that typically looks a little more conservative politically. But having said that, on economic issues, still issues like education, minimum wage, things where Democrats have been stronger, that still has a very strong appeal to Latino Protestants. They've been kind of classically cross-pressured a bit, socially conservative, economically more progressive. But in this election, with, I think, again, Donald Trump putting a kind of anti-immigrant stance so close to the heart of his campaign, we may actually see that group being pushed even more toward the Democratic side.
Okay. Bobby from Kansas City, Kansas. Bobby, you're on Up to Date. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. In reference to the earlier statement, goat herders and all, I think that's a little harsh. But I think that evangelicals are presenting a forward face that can almost only be accepted as hypocritical, or they're hitching their wagon to a one issue type of vote. And I think that has to be the choice that people, evangelicals who identify as evangelicals, in accepting Donald Trump, because this is a candidate that outside of abortion has taken an explicitly anti-Christian message, anti-refugee, anti-immigrant, pro-war, pro-violence. It's very difficult for me to understand how an evangelical can say publicly that they could embrace a candidate like Donald Trump.
Yeah. Robert?
Well, you know, one thread I want to pull out is the goat herder thing has come up a couple of times. And to contrast like that sentiment with the, you know, the voice of that pastor, that retired Baptist pastor that we heard, I think is really important. You know, you could hear, you know, kind of grief and some pain about his own son kind of rejecting, you know, the church. And I think that's where we're at, you know, is that the reason why I end the book with a eulogy is I do try to kind of imagine. So what do we do if we're presiding over the funeral of this entity that people have such disparate reactions to? Some are grieving, some are really worried about what it means, and some are like more than ready to dance on the grave, right, of something they see as archaic and has hurt the country. And I think that's really underneath a lot of our, you know, a lot of our fights, a lot of our things that seem to be about issues and are about issues, but at a deeper level, they are about these this kind of, you know, more foundational set of values and cultural shifts that we're experiencing right now.
I thought it was interesting in your book, you make the point that the death of white Christian America, Robert, is actually maybe counterintuitively going to begin to revitalize American politics. Why do you say that?
Well, you know, one of the things that we've seen is not only a kind of racial polarization along party lines, but a religious polarization along party lines. And so we've seen, you know, white Christians drifting toward the Republican Party, Christians of color drifting toward the Democratic Party. And I think if that breaks down, right, if there's just not enough of that kind of white Christian world to kind of keep being marshaled as a political tool over time, I think this can actually be both good for American politics and good for the churches. So, you know, it's certainly not good for American democracy to have a two-party system that is polarized by race and religion. You know, where you have like one group by race and religion over here, one group by race and religion over there. It means that those arguments are never going to really be about policy and what's good for the country. They're going to be along these identity lines. They're going to be tribal at the end of the day. And that's never a good formula for success in a democratic society.